Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. Today is June 25th, 2013. Our show tonight, we've got some interesting European brewers here. And hey, thanks to our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com. You can learn more about beer, go to GreatBrewers.com. All right, I'm here with Jen Swartman from Blind Tiger, who's moving out west. Jen, you just took
tomorrow.
An awesome trip. Tell us what you just did. You were in Vermont.
Oh my gosh, I went up, I took advantage of the fact that I'm still in the east for a few more days, and I went up to Burlington, I went to Waterbury and went to Prohibition Pig, which is an awesome beer bar, barbecue place. I went and hung out with Sean Lawson at Lawson's Finest Liquids for a collaboration, Spruce Tip Beer, he did with Vermont Pub and Brewing for some special events they have coming up. They have a beer festival coming up. And then, so I was picking spruce tips, and then I went and visited our buddy Dave Broderick and stayed on his farm for a couple nights. And went and saw and ate Worthy Burger for the first time.
You went to Worthy Burger.
Oh,
wow.
My gosh.
Guys, you know, you got to go to Worthy Burger.
Vermont's
Let's get the microphone. We've got some guys from Europe who've never been on the air before. We've got Lionel from Silly and Alexander from Kloster on Docks here today with their handlers from their importers. But so, Jen, Worthy Burger, Dave Broderick. So
what's it like up there? Everybody's been raving about it, and he's been talking about it. I mean, we've heard about it on the show since it was pretty much just a twinkle in his eye. And he has great partners, and they've come up with this amazing bar in South Royalton. And then it makes – I had the best burger I've ever had. With Cremant, Vermont, like goat – I think it's goat sheep's milk cheese and bacon and caramelized onions. I highly recommend that combination when you get up there.
But that sounds
great. And then I saw the new place because they're opening up a second place in Woodstock, Vermont called Worthy Kitchen. And it's well underway. I mean, like, the construction, you can see how it's going to be. And it should be open, I think, in August is what they're saying. So a lot of exciting stuff with good friends of ours going on up there. And then I went to the Shelton Brothers Festival all weekend and saw even more friends from all over the world because this is the month of brewers visiting New York. And
crazy lineup.
Right, all over the world.
After this show tonight, we're going to go to Spite and Dive and hang out with the guys from Coat mm-hmm. Brewing. The first time in New York, they're from Czech Republic.
Yeah.
And then I've got Smite Nose too, right?
And en route from Dave's farm up to Portland for the festival, I stopped through and saw our friend Davey Arrington, and he showed me their new brewery that's amazing. It's going to be Gold Star LEED certified. I think I got that right, like the highest level. So it is so ecologically sound. And the details of it are incredible. It's really incredible. It's beautiful. And it's going to have a lot of great beer garden and tasting room and restaurant and all sorts of things. It'll be a great place to visit when people make it up to New Hampshire.
Well, Jenna, we're going to make a toast to you because it's not really your last night here, but you are moving to the West Coast.
It's the last one for a while.
And we're going to miss you a lot.
I'm picking up a 26 as a 26 instead of 20-foot U-Haul tomorrow. It's going to be
26-year-old guy.
Quite the sight to see me driving through Manhattan and that tomorrow.
All right. Well, welcome, boys. This is I'm Jimmy Carboni. Jimmy's number 43 in the Good Beer Seal, and July Good Beer Month is kicking off next week. We're waiting for Mayor Bloomberg to give us our proclamation for the fifth year that July is New York City Good Beer Month, and we try to support all the small, independently owned beer bars in New York by co-founding the Good Beer Seal, and you'll learn more about that next week. So check out goodbrewseal.com. There's some special events, including we're back ending it this year. We're going to end the month July 31st with Edible Manhattan and Edible Brooklyn at a Good Beer event. And we'll be doing some live webcasts at WNYC, the Green Space, called the Craft Beer Jam. We're going to have three of those, July 10th, 17th, and 24th. It's really awesome, but keep checking in at goodbrewseal.com. All right, so we've got Lionel from Silly. This is a brewery that you may have heard about. I've had the Scotch Silly and the Silly Saison for many years, And he's here with Dan Turdo, who's his handler from the Importer Global.
Hello,
and we've also
handler.
Got a new guy here. But say hi, Lionel. Come on.
Hello. Hello, everybody. Bonjour tout le monde.
I heard you have a very strange Belgian accent.
Yeah, people say that. I can try to speak
English. Is it stranger than a regular Belgian accent? I mean, why is it a strange Belgian accent?
Well, he told me he wanted to say he had a strange Belgian accent.
Oh, if I speak English like you won't understand me, I can try to.
Nonsense. You sound fine. But you we understand every word.
I need some more beers to do that.
We really do. And then we've got this first to New York, our guy, Alexander Rice, Kloster Andex. It's from Bavaria, Bayern. It's an old Benedictine monk.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, he's
wearing a typical Bayerisch, like a Bavarian jacket. It's like a suit jacket without a collar.
That's the typical thing to wear.
And you're here with Lars from St. Killian's. Lars has been on a few times with some interesting. You guys got beers, Lars. You got beers from all over the world. You got 961 from Lebanon.
Oh yeah,
the crazy guy from Scotland. What was his name?
How about Williams Brothers?
Norman Sinclair from Orkney. Yes.
Do you have Williams Brothers also?
We do.
Yeah.
Import
Bruce,
really?
Bruce is a great. Friend of
mine. We import Williams Brothers in Veramont and Orkney from Scotland. And several other UK brands, and certainly several really nice German brands, and Andex is, I would consider, the crown jewel right now in our
fantastic
in our lineup. It's one of the very few remaining monastery breweries in Germany.
How long have they been around?
1455.
Yeah, that's a while.
That's pretty long. Yeah,
since there's a little history.
Alexander,
there.
Since when?
It's 1455 since we brew beer, so it's a long time now.
Yeah, you haven't been there since the beginning.
No, I'm sure not.
Well, Lars, give us some background. I mean, we're got a lot of brewers coming in the studio tonight. Mm-hmm. Tell us about Kloster Andex.
Well,
tell us the whole story, the backstory, why you guys are in New York. What's special about this?
Well, Kloster Andex has probably been one of those few breweries been trying to export or find an importer in the U.S. forever. And it's taken almost 30 years for that to make happen in the recent history.
And why?
And it's a long story, but in short, there have been some legal issues with them looking to actually produce in the U.S. versus importing, and there's been a connection there for a long time, and that had to be taken care of, and that only happened about 2 years ago. Luckily, we were right there, and through the help, I have to point out, through the help of Sylvester Schneider, who owns Zum Schneider in the city and on Montauk, who is a native of, he grew up just a couple miles away from Andex, and he's been bugging them ever since he's had his place in the city for about 13 years. He recommended us recommended St. Killian as the importer, and Chris Sheehan, and several others of us went out and made our presentation, and we were chosen as the importer for the northeast of the U.S. So everything Virginia north up to Kentucky is our territory.
Great. Congratulations.
Yeah. Well,
let's give us a rundown. So Benedictine Monastery.
Yeah, that's right.
Been making beer for a long time.
Yeah.
So what are the typical styles that you serve?
The typical style is the Bock Dunkel. That's what we have here. It's a double bock. It means it's alcohol like 7.8. It's brewed out of dark barley malt and with a nice aroma hops from Holledau. So the special is that we still do the traditional tree decoction system, the brewing, and we have over 6 weeks storage time with coldness like -1 degrees. Yeah, and then just a small filtration to get the proteins out, and then that's it.
It's a nice beer. Alexander, tell us how you got started. Tell us where you went to school, your first job in the beer industry.
Oh, I started just the normal school, and then afterwards I went to Weinstephan, the Staatsbrauerei in Freising. Mm-hmm. So, and I learned the job doing everything by hands, really learning it. And afterwards I was at the Augustiner Brewery in Munich for almost 6 years. Then I went to school, so I learned the brewmaster. Then I went to Straubing, that's the Carmeliten brewery. This was almost a monastery brewery. I worked there as a brewmaster. And afterwards, the next one was a brewery in Allgäu. It's in the Alps. I was there as technical director for 3 years. And then Andex came up. So since I'm 8 years.
Yeah, how many years?
8 years now.
8 years.
Eight years I'm there as the technical director.
So you're the technical director. So that means you're in charge of the brewery and all those things? Or what?
Yeah, everything. So the whole process, brewing from buying the barley, the malt, all this stuff, till to the bottle, that's my job.
So who's your boss?
A monk.
What's his name?
Pater Valentin and Frater Leonhard.
And then, what do they do with you? They talk to you? They
Give
you money? What do they do?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, they do. Yeah, no, we talk together. We try to make the beer good. Everything's going to be together. Yeah, it's pretty good. It's really nice atmosphere there.
So when you came in, did you change any beers? Recipes?
No, recipes not, but you can always do it a little better. So we try to make the technical stuff better to do it better. That's it. So the CO2 stuff and stuff like this, lots to do.
And what about the challenges for you of exporting? Was this a new challenge?
Yeah, it was a new challenge. Lars said, it was not very easy for us to do this, but we really want to do it. So now we are very happy and proud that we did it.
Were you exporting outside of Germany, not to the United States, but outside? Or
yeah, we did Europe, the whole
so
Europe.
You've been doing that for a while. Yeah, and then you can find this beer all over in Germany,
yes,
I assume,
can.
Too?
Yeah, definitely.
Do they have it on draft as well as in bottle or only in
bottles?
Both.
We do have both, yeah. So seven kind of beers in bottles and barrels.
And are you sending barrels over also?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, sure.
So. Yeah. And then we also got... Yeah, cheers to you guys, man. All right.
Lars,
tell us more about this because, you know, you guys are tracking down, at St. Killian's, you're tracking down, really, I mean, at this point, you're global. I mean, you've got
Absolutely,
American
yeah.
Meads, Lebanese Beers 961, our good friend, and Orkney from Scotland.
Yeah.
I mean, so...
We also import Tusker from Kenya. We import San Miguel from the Philippines. And yeah, so we're definitely global, if you will. We have Moa from New Zealand, which is making really, really strong impact in the market for us. Steinlager also from New Zealand. So our strategy is very, very global. It's been amazing on 961 to find new places that take on the beer from Middle East and restaurants that we've never been able to sell anything to. But our German portfolio is very strong. Besides Andex, there's also Traunstein. Very close by, which is a small family-owned brewery that we import only on draft and pretty much only sell it to a few accounts in the country. So, you know, and with Andex, our strategy for sure is to build it slowly. There's only limited amounts of beer that we can get on an annual basis. So we will roll this out very very slowly and together with the brewery.
You know, it's one thing that's nice about German beers, I've always loved them. I think they go well with food. And the styles are fairly traditional. I don't know, Jen, are you a fan of German beers?
Yes, absolutely. I have been.
So are you drinking the Doppelbock right now?
I'm actually drinking the Helles. Yeah, and I'm looking in this little stash we have here, and there's also a Weissbier Dunkel and a Weissbier Helles.
Well, let's pop them.
I know, because when I went to Germany the first time, which was a long time ago in 1991, I fell in love with their Hefeweizen. Mm-hmm. And that's when I wrapped my brain around what German yeast strains for Hefeweizen really do for beer. And then I was such a stickler that I came back to the United States and people would hand me what they called a Hefeweizen. I was like, no, that's not a Hefeweizen.
Right. This the Andex Hefeweizen is a great example of a Hefeweizen that's not overly banana-ish. It's not overly clove. It has an amazing balance and a totally different structure and mouthfeel than any other Hefeweizen from Germany that I know.
I think I'm going to open one right now.
As a matter of fact. So that the Doppelbock is the highest rated Doppelbock on almost every American beer review website.
That Doppelbock is the type of Doppelbock that a lot of American brewers could learn from.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of times when they try to make a Doppelbock, it ends up being actually residually sweet, which I know is not what the style is about.
Correct.
And so it's definitely malt-leaning if you have to put it on an index with, you know, hops to malt. But it should not be sweet. And when I try one that's true to its form,
it's balanced,
like this,
the sweet and
then
the
it's completely
and
balanced.
Yeah,
and it's honestly the kind of beer where I think of all the people out there who are learning about beer who would love to.
Alexander, we're going to take a short break, but say a few words in German for us about your beer.
This is the best you ever skipped.
All right, man. Cool. We've got an international crowd of brewers here today. We're taking a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
You're listening to Oh Lover by Four Lincolns on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Stay tuned for more from Beer Sessions Radio.
So, you like good beer. Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, GreatBrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. GreatBrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile beer cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit greatbrewers.com today.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio.
Nice to meet you.
Hey, nice to meet you, too. All right,
there are introductions taking place.
We just had the guy we've been waiting for. First time in New York in a long time. The guy's from Kootenai. Joel, how do you say it?
Kootenai.
Thank you.
Kootenai.
People of our Kootenai.
It's a small town in the Czech Bohemian Forest. It's a great brewery, Coat. It's the first time they've been in New York. They were here this weekend for the festival in Maine. And they made it to our show tonight. So let's give them a round of applause, everybody. All right. Then you do, but this is something special. I just read in the World Atlas of Beer by Tim Webb and Steve Beaumont that you guys have a very special brewery. Adrian is going to speak on behalf of the owner. Yeah, my friend here doesn't English, but I don't speak English either.
Can he just say like, Dobri den?
Dobri den, okay.
Dobri den.
Dobri den. So, Adrian, what your job is let him speak in Czech.
Oh, I don't think so because it would take too long.
Oh, okay.
Okay, if you want.
Let him say a few things. Yeah. So ask him, say, let's do an international version today. Ask him, you know, tell him his name and what he does at the brewery and a few words about the beer that we should know about.
Jsem z Kouta na Šumavě. Otevřel jsem si pivovar po 40 letech, který byl uzavřený, a dělám v něm nejlepší pivo v Čechách.
And the reason I wanted to bring this up is this is very special for us because, you know, we know that Czech has a very long history of making beer going so far back. I know that under the Soviet era, you guys suffered and, you know, things, you had the old equipment, nothing was really done. So we're really excited to have you in New York. So first of all, Adrian, we know that you guys have a very great tradition and everyone wants to have Czech beer. You made what? Pilsner and so many things. So tell us a few things about Coat and the brewery and what you guys have done, because you had to bring it back, right? It was closed. Your old brewery that
was
closed.
Where is it in the Czech Republic? Yeah.
Actually, it's not far away from Pilsen. It's like 65 kilometers. What would that be in miles, you know?
40 miles.
Like, yeah, divided by 1.6.
Yeah.
So it's south of Pilsen. It's a very small town, very traditional one. And the Coat brewery, I mean, the first written records of the brewery are dated back to like 1736. So that's the records we have actually found in archive. So it must have been there like, we guess it's been there like 100, 150 years before.
Yeah, and what we love is that this is a very traditional, great beer, you know, area. And I know that for all the changes in Prohibition and the Soviet era, you guys really suffered. And if you don't mind, let him say, ask him a few more questions, because I think it's okay that for this show he speaks in Czech. And I'm sure there's fans that can listen to us and check, and you can translate afterwards.
Okay, but go on and ask questions. I mean, what are you interested in?
Say, it's first time in New York. How much work did it take for you guys to get your beer to New York?
Je, kolik to zabralo práce, než jsme dostali pivo vůbec do New Yorku a do Ameriky? Můžete česky.
V podstatě moc práce to nedalo. Víc práce nám dalo prosadit se na českým trhu, kde jsme uspěli. Děláme pivo podle 200 staré receptury a z toho důvodu jsme nejlepší dneska.
Can we have him just
for those who happened not to understand Czech? Yeah. Do you want the translation?
I would like to know a little bit about this brewery.
So actually, it was not the big thing. Was not I mean getting in it into U.S. because we met Shelton. The big thing was restoring the whole brewery, and making it happen in the Czech. I mean all the investments, you know, make it successful domestically, make it renowned, and make people know about it, taste it.
What were people drinking before? I mean, were they?
I mean,
drinking Czech beer?
They were, of course, but mostly the mainstream because, you know, the big players now, they do have the money, you know, to buy out the market. So.
We know that in New York, too, with a lot of, like, the big breweries that want to, like, deter people from craft.
And they would, you know, they would
They've
gradually...
They've got lots and lots of marketing dollars.
Right, and they would gradually change the taste, you know. They would try to make it cheaper, to have more marketing money. They would do it gradually, and nobody recognizes how it tasted like, I don't know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. So this is how they do it, you know. They have the money, they just buy out markets. Because we even had problems. I mean, there were pubs locally who would have got money not to serve our beers, you know, from Pilsner, Urquell, and the others.
Yeah.
They would pay them not to have it, not to list it, not to buy it.
That's pretty devious. But I really do think that some of the big brand importers who I could or could not name, who could splash every billboard in New York with their brand, gained quick brand recognition and really deterred people for a while from quality. They were ready to go beyond our macro beer and go to something that they thought was higher quality.
Yeah.
But instead of turning towards craft brands, they were distracted.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they started saying certain brands without even really knowing why. And it was because it was the marketing dollars.
Well, Adrian,
so I understand
about
that here.
Just tell us more about your journey. I mean, I wanted to tell us the owner's name again. You tell us, Adrian, now.
Okay, so you want me to tell
say
you first English?
What is his name again?
Okay. How the journey went. It
no,
was
first,
easy.
I'm sorry again.
Who are the people?
Your friends who's sitting with you today, who spoke in Czech. What is his name?
He's Mr. Skala, Jan Skala.
Yes.
Very
so
Czech name,
we wanted
obviously.
To give him a chance to speak in his language because we really respect what he's doing.
Yeah.
But now tell us more about the journey. I mean, we love the Shelton brothers. And how long have you been working with the company? Give us some more information.
It's not been long, actually. We first met last year, summer, Joel.
They still love us. That's why it's not been that long.
mostly Joel.
That's right.
No, they came.
Joel's
they came.
The lovable one.
That's right.
I think you guys found us on the beer raid.
Yeah, actually, we're not proud of that way of finding beer, but we hadn't done any Czech beer for a long time, and we looked on. Dan wanted us to go over there and find some Czech beer, and we looked on Rate Beer and Beer Advocate. Three of the top 10 beers, Czech beers, were from Coat. So we said there must be something going on because their Pilsner style beers rating in the 90s on those things, and they usually rate.
So this is the first Czech beer you've imported.
We had Pivo Var Dům from it's a small brew pub in Czech Republic. We tried it years ago, and the quality was a problem, and it just fell through. So we had stayed away for years and years.
So tell us about this journey, Joel, because this is cool. I'm psyched. We got the coat, everybody.
Yeah.
Cheers. We got a lot of great beer guys in here. Come on.
It goes.
This is special resurrection of Czech good beer. You know.
Yeah. And it's a very special thing. It's the equivalent of English cask ale. Or the gravity kegs from Germany we bring in. It's the way the beer used to be made. And we want to go there and find the real stuff. You know, there's plenty of pasteurized, kind of not real stuff over here that's well known. And this is the stuff that they used to drink up until recently.
Which beer is this that we're drinking
right now? Oh, sorry. This is the, quote, 12 degree. All the beers are named with numbers of, you know, Plato. And the 12 degree is the flagship beer, the everyday Czech Pilsner, really, you would call it, I think. Adrian, correct?
No, it's... Oh, right.
Is this a growler filler or is this a bottle beer?
This is something these guys carried over by hand in their luggage in plastic jugs. This is not this is not dissimilar to what they do in the real world in Czech Republic where you'll go to the brewery and fill your plastic jug and ride your bike home and drink it. And it actually survived pretty well. Even Mr. Scala said it's only 95% off. It's 95% good.
Yeah. Explain degrees Plato. I mean, what's the translation to...
I'll let Adrian do that.
Okay. Many thanks, Joel. Well, Plato is... It is the ratio of the malt content towards the water And sure. That's the more actual, basically, the more malt you put in, the more sugars you have, you make during the brewing process. And the more sugars you get, the more there is like food for the yeast to create alcohol, CO2, and heat.
So what is the ABV on our
ABV
scale?
ABV is the final, what you get in terms of percentage of the final alcohol. And the
so Plato 12 is what the you put original.
Right. Plato is what how many percent of malt you put in the water before you start the brewing process.
Usually
with a certain Plato, you're most likely to get somewhere with the ABV.
Mm-hmm. All right. We have some other brewers here, too. We have a Lionel from Silly in Belgium. And we've also still have Alexander from close to Andex in Bavaria. What do you guys think? Isn't this cool that we've got a new brewery from Czech Republic here? I'm so old.
Actually, it's just fun to have all these countries represented right now.
What countries
do we
have?
We have shipping container we're sitting in.
Bayern, which is his own country. We have Czech, his own country. Belgium, its own country. That's pretty good.
Bayern is not
about,
exactly.
We're
going to
let the reps
country,
talk because we actually have the brewers and they're so quiet. Dan Turtle, Global Imports. Tell us about
it's Lehman, Jim.
Tim Lehman.
I'll take Turtle though. It sounds like a luscious name.
Dan Lehman. Oh,
I like it. It's right in front of you. I see it in the writing. But nevertheless, it's all good. So I'm with Global Beer Network. We do 9 family-owned Belgian breweries. And kind of our philosophy is that we're trying to build individual breweries, individual brands. We're dedicated. We don't go too much outside of the box what we have. And what that has done for us, which is really interesting, is push some of the breweries to compete with the American market. Instead of trying to find a brewery to compete with the American market, we make our breweries kind of step up. And that's why Lionel's here today, because he has an experimental dark saison sour. That we have the first growler in America on my lap right now.
Well, let's taste that trip. I want you to talk to these guys from Coke because they're here new to New York. Is your first time in New York?
Well, mine not, but Mr. Scala's definitely is.
Yes. And these are more experienced importers and stuff, and you got Joel. So, Dan, tell us a few things. What do you think about...
Shelton Brothers is pretty experienced.
Well, they
have a little bit of experience.
What do you think
they're from our home state. They're from both from Massachusetts, Shelton Brothers, Global Beer, and we have a little stinging... We're getting killed right now about the Bruins, so it's a hard time for us.
How about this? Do you want to say anything about how interesting it is to have
this great Czech brewery? No, I think it's awesome.
Here.
I think at the end of the day, what you're going to hear from all of these breweries today, we heard from from the German brewer, we heard from the Czech brewer, is a passion, which is number one thing that we always talk about. And the second thing is quality, right? You hear about experimentation all the time, but quality and belief in your product, and I think it's so cool to have so many passionate people with different styles of beer here. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm just trying to keep track of all the names because well, there's.
I know.
Hand. How about this? Just say Adrian Soroki.
Raise your hand. That helps on radio.
Pretty much.
That's really good.
It's very difficult.
Alexander
to say.
Rice.
Oh, he's over there somewhere. He's raising his hand.
Jens Swerman. Lionel Vander Hagens.
Yes.
All right.
Okay, Jimmy's taking roll call for himself so he can try to figure this
Who's
out.
Who's the guy back there with you?
That's Sebastian Sauer from Fry Guys.
Sebastian Sauer? Hey! What are you doing here, man?
He hasn't been
here
since last time.
You better come up. So tell you what, this is called...
I met that guy before.
Isn't this like the ultimate... It's the ultimate European brewery tour tonight on Beer Sessions Radio. And to tell you what, we're going to take a short break and talk about all the good things on Heritage Radio Network. We'll be back in a few minutes and we'll talk with Sebastian from Fry Guys too, all right, on Beer Sessions Radio.
This one's called When It Rains by Four Lincolns on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're out here at Roberta's in Bushwick. Coolest place in New York. It's more than pizza. It's a two-star restaurant. I think tonight I'm going to have the most fun Mangalisa pork collar for dinner. And we've got the greatest lineup we've ever had here. We've got...
For my going away party.
Yeah, Jen Swarm is here. How many... Like, we've got, you know, Alexander from Close to Ondex, new to New York. We've got Coat from Czech, also new to New York. We've got Lionel from Silly, who we love, and he's got a new beer, Silly Sour. And our buddy... I'll check his name because I'm going
and
crazy.
And that Silly Sour is pretty darn good.
Our Fry Guys boy right here. Sebastian. Yeah. Sebastian from Fry Guys. He just walked in. So, yeah, you know, there was this festival this past weekend in Portland, Maine. Jen was there. Joel Shelton's here, our buddy. And I think I want to make a toast first to the diversity of good beer in the world right now because, you know, when Michael Jackson was first writing about it, he was discovering the old breweries and people like Don Feinberg from Van Bergen de Wolf took that lead and found beers like, you know, Duvel and Saison DuPont. And looking back now we have this whole new resurgence where there's American craft beer and everyone's drinking American craft beer. But there's also these great – there's you know, like Close to Andrax over here, Alexander and Lars, you guys weigh in. You know, you guys are doing some cool stuff, and it's a traditional Benedictine monastery.
Well, within this room we have representation from – oops, on – oops. Almost a foul. Ondex, which is 14-something was when they started. And then now Sebastian's with us from Frightgeist, which is the new wave in Cologne.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and we get Silly, too, and the guys from
Yeah, so we've got Co. all a range yeah. of history here. And
so I want to try to, like, just everyone stop from it and just, like, everyone, first we have to make a toast. But just saying, if you're out there as a beer fan, I mean, this is the ultimate moment where I'm like, I still look to Europe. I love European beer, German and Czech, you know, Czech coming back. And Fry Guys, we got something from Cologne other than Kolsch. But,
you mentioned Germany cool. already.
Yeah. Well, we almost had a German show, too. And it just overwhelmed because it's really amazing. In this room right now, there's so many great beer people. And I feel so honored. And we're going to keep drinking tonight. We're going to go to Spite and Dival after this, and we're going to have a great time.
Or 508.
And then January.
I got my launch from my collaboration with 508 Gastrobrewery. I guess it's like.
You made a beer with Chris Kuzme, right?
Yeah. Chris Kuzme and I collaborated on a double IPA, which is both my first and his first double IPA. It's called Jen's Apartment of Hops.
So if I were Michael Jackson, the great beer writer, because we're trying to bring back the memory of him and you know, read his books, I would say tonight would be like the greatest beer night of my life, you know? So cheers to everybody.
Aww. So cheers.
And I want to bring Sebastian just walked in from Fry Guys. This is a cool night. Sebastian, how are you, man?
I'm fine, man.
How was the festival in Portland?
It was great. Even if Joel was around, but it was still pretty nice.
Well, somebody's got to give Joel a mic. Come on. So
I take exception to that comment.
So wait, Sebastian, what has Frightgeist? I met you last year right after the festival, same time last year. You were in the studio.
That's right,
on the same trip. And we were first hearing about your beer because you had just launched this market. And now it's a year later. And I remember you were doing you did some pretty wacky stuff, but a lot of it was based on traditional German styles. And I wanted to know what the brewery's been up to since then. What else have you been, like, what other amazing creations are you proud of?
We actually grow a lot since then, because this was just a start in the US with some small percentage of our beers which we have around. So we sat together 2 years ago with the Shelton brothers in Cologne, and we decided which beers we should start. So it was four beers right away. And after the festival, it was clear that the Geister zu Gose we made in for the festival, or we brought one keg in and everyone loved it, so we had to send it right away. And after then, we sent so many new beers inside, which we have in Germany quite more regular, but now it's quite regular in the US as well. And we're just going on and can do everything what we want, and also with other export possibilities within Europe and Canada. So that's a good situation because we just want to brew the beer we want. So we are not making beer just for selling, but just also for our own taste.
Sure.
Sebastian's being very modest, but he's just started a new side project called The Monarchy, which is an offshoot of Frygeist, and he hasn't even mentioned it yet.
No, I didn't mention it.
Did you bring any Fry Guys beer for us to drink, Joel?
I did.
Okay, let's have some.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
But no, I was more asking about specific beers that were particularly fun for you to be able to brew and launch, because I loved my favorite last year that I tried and then have tasted every time I could get my hands on it is the Abraxas, which was a smoked Berliner Weiss, as I recall.
Yep. I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah. And that one's around, but there were some others I think you brought to the festival also. So.
Yeah, right. In the meantime, we brought into the U.S. A sour porter, which is also lactic sour porter, which is referring to the old Hanseatic days when also beer was brewed with salt for the balance. And it's sour and it's really like a very full-bodied beer. We concentrated also with the new project, The Monarchy, more on way more special beers like old beer styles, which were around in the 19th century and died out in the meantime. So there's a lot of beers in the former times were around, and it was a big variety, but we want to revive as many as possible. So a lot of fun was last year in October when we brewed a Grossiski / Grätzer, which was 100% oak-smoked wheat malt beer, which was a really crazy brew because 100% wheat, everyone who ever brewed knows that this is pretty shitty for loitering. Mm-hmm. And that was a 7.7 degree Plato beer, so 3.3% alcohol, and pretty bitter, 35 IBUs with Polish hops and that kind of stuff. So one of my friends drove from Prague, from the lab, 10 hours drive to Netherlands just for bringing 3 kegs of yeast. And that kind of stuff is making a lot of fun. So we are right now pouring the Geisterzugose, which is a very traditional beer. Gose was came up in the town of Goslar, which is a bit in the middle of the center of Germany. And the river through the city is called Gose and became way more popular in the east, especially in Leipzig, but died out twice in the 20th century. And nowadays there are two versions in Leipzig around. And we are big fans of the beer style because it's very... has this great sourness, but it's not crazy, it's not tart, it's not funky.
But uses salt, right?
Right, and it's salt and coriander inside, and it's a top fermented wheat beer, and we use the old German brewing technique, which means that we use spruce branches within the wort. So you have a little bit of spruce stays inside, but it's all about balance, so we don't want to have crazy spruce stays inside, but it's really balanced.
And that was a style that almost disappeared, right?
Yeah, it died out twice in the 20th century.
And now we love it. So I'm glad you kept it alive.
Let's go around. We have so many great brewers and brewery reps in the room tonight. And let's go around and ask them. First, we're talking about the 19th century. I mean, in some ways, that was a heyday for brewing. And we're just getting back to that now. Let's start with Alexander over here. Alexander from Kloster Andechs. Tell us to you, you know, and Lars, you can jump in. You know, in 19th century Germany, maybe what were the styles that he was brewing and something?
Yeah, the style was heavy beers. So now you get to try the beer, still have the taste from beer, but not as heavy. So we can fill it with the Doppelbock Dunkel that we have a little bit less now. But where we go really stuff hard in is the white beer and the normal lager beer, which goes up. But it has to taste beer.
So let's say you want to make a historical beer from the 19th century that was from your brewery close to Andechs. What beer would you bring back
that you're not making? A dark one, a very high gravity dark one beer. That would it be?
High gravity dark. And let's talk to Adrian, representing Cote Brewery. Same thing in Czech Republic in the 19th century. You know, what were some of the beer styles that would have been really considered the top quality beers?
Well, I think Czech Republic is pretty conservative when it comes to beer. So it was most of it was like the Pilsner style lager beer. It only varies in plateau and color. And of course quality. Well, during the communist time, you know, the beer making suffered a lot by closures, you know. It was horribly underinvested. So the breweries were closing up. The smaller breweries just were closing up. You know, they didn't invest any.
So communism is the same as big beer, like Budweiser.
Now, well, the truth is that during communism, everything was state control, and the state decided where and what and who is supposed to sell. So Pilsner Urquell by then and České Budějovice, which is the Budvar, were the only two breweries awarded the right to export. And that's why, you know, there were other good beers, obviously. But these two were the only ones who actually could, so...
Were the other ones thriving within the country during that time?
Yeah, they even had They even had local... They were limited regionally. So the market was like, you know, split up into regions, and that was about it.
Yeah. And then Lionel from Silly, you're a... Tell us what was going on in 19th century in Belgium. And your family was making beer then, too.
Yeah, we started in 1850, and we started with brewing a saison. Because when my great-great-grandfather started, he had a farm, and he was brewing in the winter. And they were making a saison, or a kind of bière de garde also we started. So blending old brew and new brew, and serving it for the people doing the harvest during the summer. So they were drinking about, in liters, about 5 to 8 liters per day of that beer and working on the fields. So it was a dark beer because we were malting also. We were, in fact, cultivating the barley, then malting, and then brewing. And as we were malting, it was a dark beer because it was not as easy as today as...
Do you still cultivate your own malt?
No. We stopped malting.
Too much
also.
Work.
Yes. Yeah. It's another...
And the oldest. And Sebastian... For you, you said talk about the Gose, but tell us another style that if you were back in 19th century Germany, what beer would you be making now? Your favorite beer?
I think it would be something like a Braunschweiger Mummer. That kind of beer used to be one of the strongest top fermenting beers in those days. And but
Braunschweiger Mummer?
Yeah. It's a very, very old
Alexander, do you know that style?
Yeah, I hate it. Yeah. That's good beer.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, sure. What is that stuff?
It's not too far away from the Doppelbock he mentioned. So.
Exactly.
But it was top fermenting, and but those beers in those days were all very, a lot of them were very strong, but contained a lot of sweetness. So
what
they
was
were
very
not
strong
eaten
back
in a
then,
good way.
Is my question. Because
something
very
like
10% strong
alcohol,
yeah,
but they
very
were
very strong, right? Now in the United States can be a lot higher than that, actually. So
no,
10% though is pretty big.
But those beers used to be always very balanced in Germany, but they were still having a high plateau degree, but they had a very bad attenuation, so most of them were like probably 50% attenuated, which means that you are sometimes having 25 degree plateau, where you nowadays would have something like at least 12% alcohol and 7.5% alcohol in those days.
This is awesome. I want to cut back because we've got the guy from Coat in Czech who's here with Adrian. Adrian, let's ask him a couple more questions because this is historic. He's here for the first time in New York. He's reviving this great tradition from a country that was really kind of down and out for a long time with the Soviet era. So a couple of things. Ask him how he first started making beer and you know, his education and how long he's been working in the beer industry, things like that.
Přesně se ptá na to, jak jste začal vařit pivo prvně, proč, kdy, jaký bylo to zázemí.
Já jsem totiž ten pivovar koupil z toho důvodu, že jsem tam jako mladý kluk chodil na brigádu a po 40 letech se ten pivovar prodával už v dezolátním stavu, v rozpadlým stavu a vím, že se tam vařilo dobrý pivo, tak jsem si řekl, jak ho koupím a budu zase vařit dobrý pivo jako kdysi. Koupil jsem ho k 25. výročí svatby mý manželky s mojí manželkou, za což jsem nesklidil zrovna pochvalu, spíš mě vynadal.
Okay, Adrian. I feel like I'm in an Orthodox church or something. It's pretty awesome.
let me just say that this 18 of his...
I hope there's people who understand, but anyway. Yeah,
well,
yeah,
I got most of it.
Yeah. So, well, Mr. Skella first learned about Coat when he was like 15 years old, and he used to go to work in, during the summer, you know, to earn some money. And he went there, he went to Coat, you know, to do all the nasty things. And years later, by the way, the brewery got shut by Pilsner Urquell in 1969. And later on, like 40 years later, in 2002, Mr. Skella learned it was for sale. And he just, you know, he just realized he could or he would love to restore the tradition there. So he decided to buy it. And he took all the family money, you know, and loans and things like that and did it. which most of the family were not too happy about. So he decided to dedicate it as a 25th anniversary wedding gift to his wife, but she wasn't obviously happy about it.
And then now you guys, did you buy the original brewery or did you make a new brewery?
It's the very, no, it's the original one. So it took like 2 years, you know, to clean up the premises before they could even start reconstruction. And then, you know, putting in all the equipment, bringing it in, putting it into operation. And finally, in 2006, they brewed the first brew.
Also, ask him if he wants to say anything else, because we're going to close out
soon. Ještě
něco
k tomu říct, jenom celkově.
No, chtěl bych, aby si lidi na tom pivu pochutnali tak jako dříve.
That's excellent. Mr. Skella just said, okay, I wish the people just relished on the beer like they used to before.
And what's the last beer you poured for us? Because this is pretty awesome, the dark beer.
That's the 18, right?
That's the 18. It's Plato 18. It's 8 ABV.
It's delicious.
And it's a dark, strong dark lager. We do it the way it was used, or they used to do it before, which means open fermentation, like 18 plus days. Then it's transferred into lagering cellars, goes into tanks, stays there for a minimum of 90 days, usually more. Before it's ready the way you have it now. So you have the unpasteurized and unfiltered version.
And is it only on tap in the United States? Is that why we're drinking out of these plastic bottles? Or do you sell it in the plastic bottles? Or
we don't sell it in the plastic because plastic is obviously not a good thing. We're making...
They're kind of cool, even if they're plastic.
Yeah, they're lightweight, right. Yeah, yeah, they're lightweight. But we're making an investment, hopefully spring next year, into a bottling line. So we do keg.
Don't modernize too fast. But Joel, tell us something before we close out.
I just wanted to tell everybody that Cote Brewery was featured on Anthony Bourdain on his Czech episode. If anybody wants to go online and look for that, that's the brewery he chose to visit, and he gets a little tour there, and you can see the place on the show.
All right. We're going to sign out soon, but let's just go around one more time. Everyone say their name and their affiliation, because this is a very special show.
Jen Schwartman. I used to work at the Blind Tiger.
All right. And this guy here.
Alexander Reitz, Klosterbrauerei Andix.
All right. Lars.
Lars Dahlhaus with St. Killian Importing.
Jan Skala, majitel českého pivovaru v Koutě na Šumově.
Love that.
Adrian, the business guy from Kout na Šumově, Czech Republic.
Joel Shelton, Shelton brother.
Sebastian Sauer, Fry Guys Beer Culture and the Monarchy.
Dan Lehman, Global Beer.
Lionel van der Hagen, Brasserie de Silly.
And thanks for coming on, Lena. We didn't get to talk to you too much.
That feeling sour, I just have to say that thing, we didn't talk about it. It was delicious. So thank you for bringing that.
Very tasty.
They were all good tonight, but we didn't really talk about that.
Very tasty. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Beer Sessions Radio is supported by the Good Beer Seal. You'll learn more about us next week. Tune in, because it's a July Good Beer Month. Mayor Bloomberg will give us a proclamation for the fifth year that July is New York City Good Beer Month. And cheers to Mayor Bloomberg. Thank you so much. Thanks to BR and Joel Sheller for putting the show together tonight with our intern, Justin Kennedy. And everyone who else is here, I'm going through Jen. We got Alexander, you know, Lars, John,
Adrian,
Sebastian, Dan, and so quiet, isn't he?
Line come to 508 here. Tonight. All right, come all right. To 508. Party on.
Thanks
drink
for listening to our show. Thanks
to
Jack Inslee, Brie O'Connor, and Joe Galarraga, everybody. Thanks
thank
for listening. We'll be back next week.
Thank you for letting me be here, Jimmy. Beer
Sessions Radio. All right. Bye, Jen. We love you. All right.
Bye
Jen.
Bye, Jen.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.